Thank you for downloading or streaming this episode of Band Biographies. You can find more episodes at bandbiographies.com. That's B-A-N-N-E-D biographies.com. If you enjoy it, why not leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever service you use to listen to your podcasts? Apparently, it helps get the show up the charts so more people can see it, to download it, and then to leave further 5-star reviews. Another way you can help is by telling as many friends as possible to give it a download. Please do reach out on Twitter at BandBiogs, on Instagram at BandBiographies, search on Facebook for BandBiographies, or by emailing bandbiographies@gmail.com. But most of all, enjoy. Hello, and welcome to this special interview episode of the Band Biographies podcast. Now, I hinted that there would be a mid-month episode in April, and here it is. My guests this time are the Sewer Cats. Ferocious, fuzzy, feline inclined, the Sewer Cats are an explosive Manchester-based punk duo, drummer and singer Cass and guitarist Josh, who deliver riotous tunes of patriarchy-smashing fury. Their short and snappy songs have been described as catchy and scathing, bursting with hooky riffs, drenched in fuzz and aggressive riot girl vocals, all served up with a big helping of sass. Their new album, Cute Aggression, is out today on Manchester-based DIY non-profit punk label TNS Records. Go and find it and the Sewer Cats back catalogue wherever you stream or listen to music, as well as on the TNS Records website. Without further ado, here are Cass and Josh, the Sewer Cats. Josh and Cass from the Sewer Cats, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Before we get into it, there's always the preliminary questions that I like to get through before we kind of get into the meat of the interview itself, just so that myself and the listeners can get a better idea of who you are kind of individually. So what's the first song that you both can remember hearing where you thought, oh, I think I can do that, I'd like to do that, try and do music as a living?
Well, I mean, doing music as a living is an interesting concept in itself. Oh, sure. It's not really for a living. It's more for the fun of it and for the enjoyment of it, isn't it? But I think for me, the first time I thought, I could do this, is when I was kind of like sixth form sort of age, and I started listening to like riot girl bands, and it was something for me. Before, I hadn't really seen people like me doing music, playing drums, doing rock music, I suppose. So yeah, for me it was listening to Riot Girl kind of made me think, oh yeah, I could do this, you know, it's not just for boys.
And was that the kind of 90s and 2000 Riot Girl movement? What kind of bands were you listening to?
Yeah, exactly. So like I was listening to Bikini Kill and Hole and L7 and Babes in Toyland and stuff like that. And at my sixth form, there was like a library where you could take out CDs. So I used to take out all the CDs and like copy them and listen to them that way. And that was really great. I got through like a big catalogue of different bands that way.
It's interesting. I've just released an episode today with another band from LA. And one of the guys there was like, I've never bought an album in my life. I used to go to the library and rent out like 10 CDs at a time and do exactly that.
Yeah, it was so good.
And what about you, Josh? What was your kind of entry?
I didn't really buy many albums because like I had an older brother who just kept like feeding me like loads of music. So I got into like punk music through that way, really. The Stooges, probably the first band I really, really got into, and still probably my favourite band, and like playing along to Van House, and like, yeah, I'd like to do something like this, and I still sort of copy them a bit, but then everyone does, so that was probably it for me.
Yeah, and was it always guitar for you, or have you tried different music? Where, did you start with guitar?
I've dabbled on a few things. So I played trumpet, that was my first instrument, and I still bash it out occasionally, but I'm not gonna I'm not going to do it like for us. And yeah, we're not going to be like a ska band.
You also not mentioned the bassoon.
We're not going to come to that. Yeah, I played the bassoon for it. That was awful. It was terrible. It's like the butt end of like every like orchestra. So yeah, I started on classical music recently when I was like really young.
Okay.
Parents probably didn't really want me to play guitar, and then influenced my brother basically to taught me how to play, and then like it took off.
The typical rebellious kind of story.
Hate of the orchestras is awful.
And was it always drums for yourself, Cass?
Yeah, so when I was at school and I really wanted to play an instrument, and really I've kind of wanted to do the same as Josh, really, where everyone was in the orchestra and, you know, you would play a clarinet or a flute or whatever. But my mum and dad weren't really keen on me bringing home like a screechy instrument. So, and the school had just got a drum kit, and so my mum was like, well, why don't you do drums, because you can't bring that home. So they got me some drum lessons at school, but yeah, soon enough, like, I did want a drum kit at home, and I did eventually get a drum kit at home, and they probably regretted that decision.
They still do. What are you doing?
So they didn't want you to bring home screechy instruments, so they got the loudest instrument there possibly is.
Better than a violin though, isn't it?
Like, yeah,
unless you're amazing, the violin sounds shit.
It does sound rubbish, and like, it's instant satisfaction, the drums, I think, because like, you within like a couple of lessons you can, you know, you can play along to a song like easy. So I think for me, I'm not that musically minded when it comes to sort of like reading music or anything like that. I find all that sort of stuff really difficult, and I tend to like go more by feel, and so I think the drums are like a good fit for me, really.
So did you come from musical families? I mean, Josh, it sounds like your family was quite musical.
Yeah, my older brother, I keep going on about him, but literally he can play anything. So yeah, we all just, yeah, we're sort of copying him. And yeah, I guess like my parents could like do a bit, but they weren't into rock music or anything. So yeah, that's why they wanted us to like play, like, you know, play classical, which just didn't work for any of us.
Did they play classical as well?
Yeah, they weren't great, but they, you know.
Your dad can like play guitar.
Weren't like amazing classical, you know, musicians or anything.
Yeah. And my side don't play anything at all, actually.
Right. So you had to find your own way into music.
Yeah.
So what were the first kind of albums that you bought then, with your own money? I mean, if indeed you were, because it sounds like you were ripping albums.
Yeah, such cheapskates.
Yeah. No, we all did it. It was the early noughties.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, going back like a bit further, so this would be like sort of mid-90s, I suppose. Like, you know, with my own money, I just used to go to Woolies and buy, you know, like the Now compilations. That was like my thing that I used to buy. Some really awful things. But like, one of the first singles I remember buying, so this is probably like 2000 maybe, is I bought Hey Ya by Outkast. I remember like buying that.
That's a great song.
And I stand by that choice, because that is probably the greatest pop song of all time. So I think that's a pretty good choice.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
I honestly, I don't know, because like, I was just...
Well, this is the great thing about having an older brother, I suppose, is that you kind of inherit everything from them. I am an older brother, and I know that my younger brother, he got into kind of punk and metal just because, well, osmosis, basically. I get that about the Now CDs as well. I think they were a kind of rite of passage, really.
Those compilation
albums. But I always found that there was one CD that was really pop, and then the other one was slightly more alternative with kind of hip hop and rock stuff on there. There was always one good CD and one slightly naff pop CD on there.
Yeah, and probably at the time I probably preferred the naff pop CD.
So we're talking like Steps and Boyzone and things like that.
Yeah, I wasn't actually so fond of the boy bands. I think that says a lot, like, it says a lot, doesn't it, about the trajectory I was about to go on. I always prefer the girl bands. But yeah, I'm trying to think of like anything that stood out from them. I wish I still had them because I think it'd be really funny to like listen to them now. I'm sure you can find them somewhere.
There's probably a Spotify playlist somewhere. There's a Now playlist out there somewhere. So when did you kind of graduate and kind of go to like live music, live shows? And what were some of the first kind of shows that you went to see? Who was playing?
Yeah, so it's funny actually, because like one of, I'm not sure if this was the first, but it was definitely one of them we went to together. So like we've known each other since we were teenagers. And so I suppose like those kind of early steps into seeing music live, we would go together like as a little gang. And so one of the first ones that we could remember was going to an all-dayer at a venue in Gloucester, where we're from, called the Welsh Harp. And it was quite like a popular, like small venue. And it was really popular with like people of our age then, because it served you if you were underage. So yeah, it's no longer in operation, I'm told. So we went to this punk all dayer, and it was like GBH and UK Subs headlining, and like loads of other punk bands. And so that was like my kind of first experience of seeing live punk, and I have to say I was a bit bored. Because yeah, it was again, you know, like you go there and you think no one here is like me. You know, I can't, like, they're all sort of older men, older white men. And it's sort of like, you know, for a while I enjoyed it, and then I just started to get like a bit weary of it. And then I had too many Bacardi breezers and I had to be taken home.
Brilliant. And so it's been really important, obviously, for you to see females in bands doing their thing. It's one of the things that's come out in the last few years with inclusion and diversity and that kind of thing, is being able to see yourself in a performer, in a film, in a whatever it is. And so is that seems to have been something quite core to who you are. And does that kind of influence the message of the Sewer Cats as well? There's a lot of kind of very, what would you call it? Would you describe yourself as a feminist band, or is that too reductive?
I think I don't think it's too reductive. I think it is what it is, you know?
I never and, like to say the wrong thing around these issues.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
No, I don't think that's the wrong thing at all. I think actually, thinking about it, it's one of the reasons why we ended up doing it is because we kind of thought, well, you know, it's important to kind of do, you know, because, like you said, you can't be what you don't see. And so you've kind of got to, I suppose, like when we started this band, I wasn't really ready to start this band. Like, I didn't really feel prepared. I had never done vocals before. I hadn't picked up a drumstick for like 10 years. So when we were playing our first gigs, it was not easy to do. But I just felt quite strongly like, well, I feel like I should just have a go at it, because it's kind of important just to have a go. And even if you think you're going to feel stupid, it's sort of like an important thing for maybe other people to see. So, I completely agree with the sentiment of, you know, women in music need to be visible and out there to help everything along, I suppose.
But it's mad, isn't it? Because, like, I mean, I do documentaries as well as these interview episodes. And some of the most popular ones that I've done have been Susie and the Banshees, The Slits, and X-Ray Specs. And you're like, well, there's three incredibly diverse but very successful in their own right bands. I mean, Susie and the Banshees was incredibly successful. The Slits and the X-Ray Specs, slightly more kind of cult, I suppose. But still incredibly important and influenced all that Riot Girl movement that came later in the kind of late 80s and early 90s. So like it's mad to me that there have been these incredibly strong women in rock music, and yet still it feels like the representation isn't there, and the kind of success of female artists is still almost a part of their success comes down to their sexuality rather than the message.
Yeah, it can be reduced to that for sure. And I think particularly sort of at grassroots level, like you just don't see as many women or marginalized genders, you know, performing. And it's like you say, you know, we've had these standout bands with, you know, women artists like kind of leading the way, but that doesn't necessarily translate down. And so, you know, at a local level, I think we need to do more to make sure lineups are equal, so that, you know, we get young kind of, you know, people coming through.
And do you think that's because there's slightly too much gatekeeping going on, or that, I don't know, what do you think the issue is?
I think it's sometimes laziness on, you know, promoters' parts, you know, kind of not sort of thinking about diversity, not kind of thinking, oh, okay, you know, I'm putting this lineup together, who shall I ask? Just kind of thinking, well, I'll ask my mates and they all happen to be white blokes. I think it's that. I think it is getting better, I have to say. You know, having kind of experience doing sort of live gigs when I was a bit younger in comparison to now, it's loads better than it was back then. I think we've still got further to go, but I think there has been like some positive steps made, and I think there is more of a conversation now around diverse lineups and making sure that it's more equal.
There's like literally one club in my town now that does live music. Like everything else has been shut down, and I think also that adds to the non-inclusive nature of things. Again, it's like the certain couple of promoters who do that night ask the same bands on, and it's a little bit kind of stifling. So you mentioned that you'd played in bands previously. Was it the two of you in other bands, or were you playing in separate bands?
Yeah, so when we were teenagers, you know, with the sort of like gang that we hung about with, like Josh's brothers and stuff, we were kind of all in bands then. So we were briefly in a band together. Then I was in one with Josh's younger brother. So yeah, we were kind of doing things like when we were teenagers. None of it was particularly good.
I'm not going to tell you the name. You're not going to know anything.
I don't think there's any recordings out there.
It's terrible.
But, you know, like, I had an experience of sort of playing local gigs back then. And it was tough, you know, like the things that people used to say.
It just depends on the region.
It's just
well,
really awful. Yeah,
I
think. Yeah, because we were in Gloucester, I think it had a bit of a small town mentality as well. I think maybe it wouldn't have been the same in a city like Manchester.
Do you think that that's something that spurred you on?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you know, I think for me, it just like made me more and more determined really to prove people wrong. So,
Okay. And so how long have you been playing as the Sewer Cats then? What was the impetus for starting this band?
So really for a long time, because we had done bands before, we talked about doing another one, didn't we? So yeah, we finally got our act together really. And I got a drum kit and we started playing again, started jamming a bit. But at that point, I'd never done vocals before. And we thought we would do some kind of like post-rock sort of soundscapes or something like that. And like maybe put it on SoundCloud and that would kind of be it. And we had the name Sewer Cats, because when we go on holiday, we always find like the stray cat populations wherever we go and feed them, and we call them the Sewer Cats.
Right.
So we had this idea for the name. But yeah, when we started jamming, one day I just started shouting things over the top of the music, and we were like, that sounds pretty good, you know, like let's do some more of that. And that's just how it came about, really. And that was sort of the end of 2018.
And so so the whole, I was going to ask about the cat motif. So it's literally like you guys attract stray cats.
Yeah. Maybe it's our smell.
And so, like, I mean, the power, was it always going to be like a power duo? Was that always the plan? Or were you, off with other musicians? Or
do you know what? Like, people ask, like, why did you decide to be a duo? But honestly, we never even thought about inviting anyone else in. I think because we were just like, oh, it's just a really casual thing that we're just going to do for a laugh. Like, we never thought about, oh, we need to recruit a bassist or anything like that. And yeah, so, you know, and when we played our first gig, we honestly thought, oh, we'll just do this one gig, get it out of our system. It'll probably be a real disaster, and then we'll just never do it ever again. So yeah, it's basically like a bit of a joke that got out of hand, I think.
But equally, I think it lends a certain, like, a limitation, but in that way you can be creative within the limits of just having the two instruments and voice. I mean, if you look back, I mean, it starts with the Carpenters, right? The classic rock duo. And then you go through kind of White Stripes, Death From Above, 1979, Royal Blood, Slaves, Deep Valley. Did you take any influence from any of those bands?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think, you know, like, I think sort of growing up when we did, White Stripes were massive. I remember it used to be like a real kind of pet hate of mine because people would always compare me to Meg. And I used to be like, oh, don't call me Meg. But I love Meg, actually. And I think Meg's brilliant because, in my opinion, there's just like nothing worse than an overambitious drummer. And Meg definitely wasn't that. Meg like played exactly what was right for the song. And I just love to think of Meg sat on her pile of money while people slag her off. I just think she's brilliant. So yeah, and I think you're absolutely right what you say about the limitations, because we do have to think about things creatively, don't we? And you have to kind of, I think like a lot of inspiration can come from limitations, actually, and it makes you do things in a different way, because you can't just like strum chords, because it just like would be boring.
I think the whole way we approach songs is completely different to everyone else. Yeah. I think it makes it sound unique.
Yeah.
So how do you kind of sit down and how do you come up with ideas? Like you say, you can't really strum basic chord patterns. So like, how does the writing process work? Is it, I assume it's got to be quite collaborative between the pair of you.
Yeah, so usually we'll kind of start the process with probably one line that I have, like one line of vocal. And it will just be something that I've heard someone say, or like, so yeah, some sort of catchy line. And I'll sort of just shout that over and over and over again. And we'll just kind of fit some sort of music to it.
Yeah, I often try and fit the guitar to sort of fit the vocals and the drums all together, so they work as like a sort of one sense, rather than just, strumming bar chords. I tend to play quite like busy, and it all sort of fills in the gaps, because Cass has to play, you know, when she's singing, she has to play fairly simple like drum beats. I think it kind of works.
So we'll start with that, won't we? And then we just kind of develop it until it kind of turns into a song. But yeah, like that's normally how it works. And normally they come together pretty quick. If like they take too long, they usually don't make it. they're normally like, come together within the first sort of 5-10 minutes, you've got the main sort of song, and then we'll kind of spend some time sort of like refining it after that.
I think that's the best thing about being in punk bands, though, isn't it? Like, it's quite an immediate gratification, really, because you can come up with like two or three, maybe four chords, and write some lyrics to them. And yeah, if it doesn't come together within half an hour, probably isn't going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's too much hard work, yeah, it usually doesn't make it.
You, Cass, have chosen one of the most difficult things to do, it feels like, to me, because I dabble with drums. I'm really crap at it, but there's no way, like, it's coordinating four limbs and also singing is quite a difficult thing to do. Like, has it taken a while to perfect it?
I always think it looks way more hard for, like, to my eyes to play
getting the volume while sitting, because you're shouting as well. And Cass literally can drown out, like, any man, like, standing up without doing anything else, sat down on the drum kit. Like, it's incredible.
It's like, you knew that when you used to say to me, use your indoor voice.
Yeah, Cass has got the rabbit voice, but it works.
So, does it always work, like, when, you know, I'm just at home?
You're trying to whisper. Like, tricky or something.
I don't know. I mean, like, it came quite naturally, I think. I think it helps that I play drums in quite a simple way. And so, like, you know, I'm not kind of overcomplicating things so that the vocal can go over the top. I also tend to sing. I've got quite a low voice, right? So I sing low, but I shout high. Mm. So it kind of carries over the top of everything else, which I think really helps. It does take some effort to... I think I've got better over time. So, like, it's, you know, over time I kind of refined the way I do things. I think the hardest thing actually is catching your breath, because it's so physical playing the drums. And then, like, sometimes, you know, like, your lungs are just like, after a song, just like, you know. So yeah, I think, like, running out of breath can be a problem. But yeah, I think I have took to it quite well, so that's good.
Sometimes you do wish you were released for the drum kit.
Yeah, I think sometimes I do wish that I was, like, just a singer, because I do feel like that is something that, you know, is hard with being a duo. Mm. And having me being the singer is that I can't interact with the crowd as much as someone else could, and that is a bit of a frustration sometimes, I think.
Yeah, I can imagine that. But at the same time, it's quite a two-piece punk band is not the norm. Like I say, I could only reel off, I was thinking of, like, two-piece rock bands, like, and I could only think of, like, five or six. I'm sure there are more, but seeing you two kind of in your full-on attack mode, I mean, I'd imagine it's quite a powerful sight anyway, really.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, I can't comment on that.
We have tried like recently kind of getting a bit more crowd interaction where like we kind of invite people up to kind of hit a cowbell and stuff. And
right.
That's been like going well. People seem to enjoy kind of like being part of it. And I think again, it sort of like blurs those lines between, you know, who can do it, like who can be involved. And I think like, you know, anyone can have a go. So like, it's good to kind of get that interaction, I think, from the people watching.
Yeah, definitely. And so more recently you've signed to TNS Records. What was it that kind of made you pick them to go with as a record label? I assume it's probably down to their kind of non-profit DIY punk ethos. Or were you looking for a label, or did they come to you, should I say?
Yeah, so TNS are, you know, they're so part of the scene in Manchester. So like we got to know TNS through playing like local gigs around here. And Andy from TNS along with Joe puts on Garlic Bread Club, which is a really great punk night here, which we played at, and TNS are also involved in Manchester Punk Festival, which we're playing at soon. So it was the natural choice, wasn't it, really, to go with TNS. And you know, they've been so good at helping us with everything and, you know, getting the word out there. And, you know, we can't thank them enough, really, for what they've done with releasing this record.
Mm. Yeah, it was released on Hell Hath No Fury Records.
Yeah.
But that came to an end. So then, yeah, we went looking for someone else.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure, actually, I should have asked whether you were on another label before. I wasn't sure whether it was that or whether you were releasing independently. So the new record that you mentioned there, Acute Aggression, is coming out today. And you were gracious enough to give me a kind of sneak preview of it as well. And yeah, I love it. I mean, compared to the last ones, it seems like you guys have gone in a slightly more, I mean, it sounds angrier. I don't know whether that's something that you guys have experienced over the last couple of years. Because the last album came out, was it 2018 or 2019?
19.
No, 2020.
2020?
Yeah. Oh, was it 2020? Sorry.
April 2020. Wow. Yeah, so it came out during the first lockdown.
Mm.
Yeah, right at the start of the lockdown. So, yeah, great time to release a record. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't, you know, anything too important. But, yeah, we released it then and we did some live streams and stuff to promote that at the time. But with this record, yeah, you're right. I think I just get angrier and angrier.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when I was looking, well, I was listening through to it earlier on the last couple of days, Delia and My Dark One especially came across as quite angry. I mean, there's been a lot to kind of get angry about over the last couple of years, I guess. Was there anything in particular that kind of sparked that? Apart from obviously, you know, the government being fucking awful. And
yeah.
world leaders waving their dicks about while completely ignoring or actively killing their own populations.
Yeah, I think, you know, you've hit the nail on the head really there. Like, I think you couldn't, you know, most of the album was written during the lockdown and you couldn't help but like look around you at what was happening and think of the complete incompetence of the government at handling it. So it's very much against that backdrop. Also, there's like a lot of loneliness in the record. Obviously, we've got each other. We were locked in together, which was great, actually, because we could write loads. Mm. But outside of that, I couldn't work. So I did a bit of volunteering and I met quite a lot of lonely people through that. And there's a couple of songs on there that are kind of written from their point of view, actually. There's a couple of songs that, yeah, like I'm sort of playing a role of someone else, I suppose. Also, just some sad things happened to us. I went through a period of like being quite depressed and anxious at one point. And, you know, it has a flavour of that, I think, on some of the tracks, like My Dark One. So I think just generally, as our records have progressed, they have got darker. Hmm. I think because as I've kind of got more used to writing songs, because as I mentioned, it's very much been like a learning process as we've done this band. I'd never wrote a song before doing this band. I've become more comfortable, I suppose, with kind of talking about the way I feel more personally. And I've kind of gone to some more difficult places, I suppose, lyrically. And I've kind of pushed myself more on this album to, I suppose, be a bit more vulnerable.
And is it just you who comes up with the lyrics, Josh? You don't have a, or do you contribute some as well?
I don't really add anything to the lyrics.
Do just I? Trying to think. I'm always you like, probably have done one.
I'm always like telling you to like crack the whip, aren't I? Like write a song.
Yeah.
I'm always having guitar lines. I'm just waiting for Cass to come up with something.
Yeah. We have this like joke that Josh is like Greg Ginn from Black Flag.
Because... not that bad. I am not that bad. I do not make you practice 6 hours a day.
Because, yeah, he's all on at me to, like, you know, write a song, practice more.
Yeah.
I think the songs, like, are always quite personal, really. They come from things that have happened to me. So, yeah, like, I just kind of try and, like, write stuff down and things people have said, like, as they happen. So, yeah, I better crack on with some more, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've been so mild mannered up till now, Josh. I don't know.
Now he's showing his true colours, aren't you?
Just under the surface, it's all boiling away. But it's not all darkness, is there? There's a bit of light in there too. I mean, some of the stuff that made me smile, I mean, Sausage Fest, for example. And I love the title of Shit in Your Hands and Clap. I love it. And also English Spaghetti, I was like, well, I can see exactly where that's coming from.
Yeah. I think though that has like two sides to it as well, because that's sort of like written from the point of view of someone else. It's actually based on a real recipe someone gave me.
Right.
I wouldn't recommend it. So it's basically you get the spaghetti, no garlic, no onions. You just make like a tomato.
I'll give it a go.
You mix the spaghetti and tomato sauce, put it in a ramekin, and crack an egg on top and put it in the oven.
Yum.
Okay, right.
And that is English spaghetti. It was actually based on that recipe. And it's kind of like a character, sort of loosely based on someone I know, who actually, you know, has all these kind of opinions that I don't agree with, but deep down is a nice person. And how do you kind of reconcile that? And I think it's sort of, yeah, towards the end it's sort of like showing some empathy for someone like that, because if we don't, like, we're doomed, really. We've got to try and, you know, find common ground with even, you know, people that have really terrible opinions, I suppose.
But I think that's another thing that 2020 and 21 have kind of given us pause for thought. Like you, Cass, I was not working for most of 2020, and it gave you a lot of time to sit and think. And there's a lot of division, and I think you're absolutely right. Dialogue needs to happen, doesn't it? Because otherwise, I mean, at the extreme end of things, you get what's going on in Ukraine, where people can't talk to each other. And, but obviously on the less extreme side of that, I know ever since maybe 2016 and the Brexit referendum, there's been a real division in families as well as just society in general. And yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that that's a, you know, it's a positive thing to be showing in song form. There are two sides to a story, and there's always middle ground that you can come and meet in the middle, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think particularly punk can be a bit obvious at times. And like, you know, it's not like I'm saying I'm a really subtle songwriter, because at times I'm really not. But it can be a bit too much like, yeah, just very one-sided kind of hate towards the other side, which has its place. And obviously, you know, there are times on this album where we do kind of throw, you know, accusations at the other side, I guess. But yeah, I think we need to try and have some empathy for people that we disagree with.
Good place to be. And there's also a little bit more of Josh on backing vocals on this one as well. Like it seemed on the last two albums, because I listened to the EP and the original kind of demo recordings as well. Is that because of increasing complexity of the songwriting, or is it just more confidence these days? Or
yeah, I think it's partly like more confidence. I haven't done any vocals either, so yeah, just got more confident with it. And yeah, some of those vocals on the albums I actually do live, and some of them I don't do live that we just decided to do like when we were recording. But I think it does add like a certain like something extra, because you've got Cass's high voice and my low voice. I think it does enhance some of the songs.
Yeah, I think that's something that kind of stood out anyway, because obviously up until this point, there's been the one voice, and then having that second one underlying and, like you say, boosting in some cases, I thought they really worked. And actually going back to something that I didn't really pick up on, like Cass, you said that you hadn't really done singing before this as well. Why did you decide to become the drummer and the singer then in that case?
Just necessity, I suppose. Like I said, you know, it just one day it just sort of happened. And then, yeah, before I knew it, I was the singer as well. But yeah, it's something that I'm enjoying so much. You know, I've always been one to like love karaoke and singing in the car and stuff.
Yeah.
But I always thought I can't sing, you know, I can't hold a tune. And like, I wouldn't say I'm, you know, like a sort of proper singer, but yeah, I can belt out a vocal for sure. So yeah, it's something that, you know, I wish I'd done sooner really.
And I suppose, you know, coming into 2022 now, it seems like things are getting back to normal. Whether they should be or not is up for question, I guess. But the gigs are starting to come back through again. Is that something that you're looking forward to? Because obviously I assume there was a dearth of playing live for a while. I mean, how did that affect you guys, kind of lockdown and the last couple of years? I mean, I know you said you were doing some live streams, but you know, it's not quite the same, is it?
Shit, let's be honest. No one wants to see some like wailing like in his living room, but like, you know.
Yeah.
It's better than nothing, isn't it?
So, yeah, it's better than nothing. And I think we used the time well, because I think we just wouldn't have got an album together had we not had the time, I think, to write for it. But yeah, it's so good being back live, because I think that is our strength really, is playing live. And so yeah, really enjoying being back to it. And we've booked a tour for May and June, so we'll be announcing that soon. And yeah, looking forward to playing some new places and yeah, seeing new faces and all of that.
And records always try to mimic like what we're like live. We try and get a pretty sort of raw sort of sounds and sort of get people interested in what we sound like live.
Yeah, so when you come and see us live, a lot of people say, oh, it sounds exactly like the record. And I hope that's in a good way, as in the record sounds very kind of live sounding. And yeah, you know, like I don't think we're sort of too different sounding it's to the record at all when we play live. It's you know, just more energetic, I suppose.
The next time we're going to get auto-tune on you then.
That's the thing, isn't it? I think punk bands especially need to sound that energetic, and yeah. Certainly the recordings that you've put down even before this album were raw and live sounding anyway. I mean, I think that's definitely a strength, and certainly if people are saying, oh, it sounds like the album, I would say that that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I see you're playing down in Hastings as well, which is down not too far away from me, so I might come and might come along to that one for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we might have a date even closer to them to you, actually.
All right.
So yeah, and we've got the Chatham date, which
I that's literally down the road.
Yeah, there you go.
Where are you playing in Chatham?
Poco Loco.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's the only place in Chatham to play. Of course it is.
There you go. Excellent.
Oh, cool. Well, I'll definitely see you there then, for sure.
Great.
Cool. What are some of your favourite things about playing live? I mean, and do you have any kind of standout shows that you have played?
Yeah, I think just kind of experiencing people like up close, enjoying it. In Manchester, we have this whole thing of like everyone does pyramids, you know, it's just like, there's nothing like it, is there really?
Yeah, just like the energy.
Yeah,
just
the energy of it all. Yeah, it's brilliant.
I also like the fact that you don't know really what's going to happen. Like,
yeah.
Like some random shit often happens.
Yeah.
Sometimes I tread on my guitar lead and pull it out, and sometimes it goes quiet for a bit, but that's all part of the chaos.
Like, yeah.
The chaos is quite, makes it exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say like a standout kind of place to play that we love going to is Conroy's Basement in Dundee. That's always just so good there. They have a brilliant sound system, so it's like super loud, and like just everyone is like just so up for it. Like, you know, whenever a touring band comes through, they just like can't wait to see you. And yeah, it's just a brilliant atmosphere there.
Oh, cool. I'll have to look out for that one.
Yeah.
What are your favorite or least favorite things about being in a band together?
Oh, everything is fine.
Yeah. See, like that. It's not like I'm like Greg's cracking the whip again.
I mean, I just think it's a bit of a boring thing to say, but the convenience of it.
The convenience is really the reason you like being about me. Brilliant.
But no, in all seriousness, like it's just it's easy to get together to practice. It's easy to book gigs because, like, you can just shout to the other one, are you free on this day? Like, we just know of so many other bands that end up kind of not doing as much as they'd like because it's just the logistics of it is so difficult. So I think that's, like, just a real plus point for us. But ultimately, I'm sorry to be like, this is a little bit soppy, but I just love kind of that we've like created something together. It is like, you know, like kind of, you know, making your little like album baby that you've kind of, yeah, like you've really worked on together. And it's just so satisfying to kind of create that, you know, just the two of us, I guess. And I think that's partly why I like it just being just the two of us. There's no other involvement because, you know, you can be proud of this thing that you've made together.
Cool.
Yeah, I feel like we've got like such a connection. We've been together for such a long time. We know each other so well. We know what each other's going to do and like, what we're going to play. So
yeah, and it does translate to the music, doesn't it? Yeah. Mm.
I was going to say, does that help live as well?
Yeah, I think so. So, I mean, the sound engineer that we work with, Tom, we've worked with him on all our stuff. He even like just recorded like our demo in our living room. The first thing that we did. And he says like that we have this weird timing thing that he's only seen with either us or with siblings, weirdly, where like we know without counting when each other's going to stop and start. And so like we've got a song on the album which has like sort of starts and stops. And like, he's just like, how do you know like when to do it?
Because it's not the actual right time.
It's not actually
we're not like in position.
It's not actually on the count. It's just we just know. So yeah, it is. You do have that kind of like weird connection musically, I think.
Oh, that's cool. And before we do end, I didn't want to. I wasn't sure about asking that question first off, because I never like to put a bit of jeopardy into an interview. But before we do bring it to a close, I mean, what music are you listening to at the moment that you think others should also be tuning into? And what bands are in your kind of local scene that you'd like to kind of give a bit of a shout out to?
Oh, there's so many. Yeah.
Just the DIY punk scene at the moment is amazing. There's so many bands that are just so good. You just, every time you go to a gig, you see someone you don't know, you didn't know before, and it's just like, wow, that was amazing. Like even this, like this Saturday, Garlic Bread Club, like Electric Press and Going Off, like never heard them before. They just blew us away.
Yeah, they were incredible. So yeah, there's just so many. So there's those two. And we really love Bruise Control, Haste, Comeback Clit, who are out of Hastings. We're going to be like touring with them. They're going to do a couple of, they'll do the Chatham date actually. Right. So you'll see them then. Riviera Kid, Piss Kitty. We're going to miss someone. And there's of course like Josh's elder brother's band, which is All Deep Ends. They're about to come and stay with us today. So yeah, there's loads.
And I think that was something that, you know, talking about, especially for example, female fronted and queer bands as well. There's a lot actually going on now. And there seems to be quite a burgeoning scene for that kind of that kind of subgenre, if it even is a subgenre, you know. And even going through yesterday, I kind of went through your Twitter followers and who's following you and all that kind of stuff. There's so many bands from so many various backgrounds and subcultures, so much going on in that space that it seems like a really exciting area to be involved in.
It absolutely is, yeah.
And so what's next? Obviously the tour is next, I guess, and promoting the album. I mean, and it sees you going around the UK. How many dates are you playing?
What, about eight, I think, so far.
Yeah, I think that's about eight. So, we're going to do a few Scotland dates and then over sort of one weekend, and then a couple of weekends later, we're going to do the kind of South dates. So that's really exciting. And this weekend we've got MPF as well, which will be our album release show. So that's really exciting to get there because that's been delayed for 2 years. So super excited to perform there as well.
Excellent. And also the video out now as well for Delia.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I was going to come around to and didn't. So it's a great video. I love it. Really kind of kinetic and well shot. But there's a whole thing about Johnny Cash there.
Yeah.
Like, and I was reading, it was, he actually has a song about Delia, right?
Yep.
Delia's Gone.
Yeah. So basically we were listening to that track. We were listening to Delia's Gone. And, you know, before anyone thinks I'm hating on Johnny Cash, I actually really like Johnny Cash. And his music. But yeah, that song, it's not actually written by him. He's the person that made it famous.
Right.
But it's a folk song that's based on a real murder victim. So the real Delia was a 14-year-old African-American girl who was shot by her boyfriend. And that folk song has been sang by many men down the years. And I just kind of had this idea that it would be kind of an interesting thing to write a response to that song from Delia's point of view, and to just be kind of really sassy and sort of extra and just be very kind of, you know, sort of make this kind of almost like have sort of a kind of girlish fun comeback to it, really. And yeah, it's one of like most poppy songs that we've ever written. But yeah, it's a lot of fun, I think, for a song about domestic violence.
Well, they were, there was a big tradition of murder ballads, wasn't it, in the kind of country and Western scene. So interesting to have a retort from one of the characters.
Yeah.
This many years later as well. And an amazing guitar line on that as well, I noticed. No, I really enjoyed it. And is that the single from the album so far? Or are there going to be more?
So that will be the kind of last single, I guess, but we've done another single actually before that one. So we did Answer the Question, which is the first song on the album. And that's got a video too. Josh always plays the villain.
I play the bastard because I'm a white man. Like,
so yeah, he's the villain in that video pants, too. So yeah, check that one out because that's a good laugh.
If you want to see him running around Manchester like a twatty Tory, then yeah.
I will definitely go and check that out. And I also obviously implore everyone listening to go and check out the Sewer Cats and their back catalogue, but especially the new album, and keep an eye out for where they're playing on their tour. Go and check them out. Where can they find you?
I think we're everywhere, really. So, yeah, I think it's the Facebook, The Sewer Cats, Bandcamp, Twitter, The Sewer Cats, Instagram. Yeah, you can find us everywhere. If you just put in The Sewer Cats, you'll find us.
Josh and Cass, thank you so much for coming on. And I look forward to seeing you in Chatham in a few weeks.
Yeah, a few weeks' time. It'll be in June.
June.
So we'll let you know the dates. But yeah, thanks so much for having us on.
Yeah, no problem at all. I'll get you a drink when you're down there.
Brilliant. Thanks, Tom.
Cool. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
There you go. What great people. I'm absolutely buzzing. I'm recording this for the first time in a long time, right after I've had the conversation with Cass and Josh. And I'm absolutely buzzing, as I say, especially as I get to see them in a few weeks, virtually on my doorstep. It's always the sign of a great interview when the conversation carries on after I've stopped recording, and we went on for another 10 to 15 minutes. Cass and Josh are lovely people making great music. Make sure you go and check them out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Music, everywhere, and let them know I sent you. Till next time. Take care and stay safe. Thank you for listening to this episode of Band Biographies. If you enjoyed it, please don't forget to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever service you use to listen to your podcasts. Please do reach out on Twitter at BandBiogs, Instagram at BandBiographies, search on Facebook for BandBiographies, or by emailing bandbiographies@gmail.com. See you next time.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frunino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.